Chapter 37. The next minute or so was a stunned blur of the five senses. The welcome statement had shocked Thomas, but before he could respond, the long-haired man practically pulled him and Brenda inside, then started ushering them through a tightly packed crowd of dancing bodies, gyrating and jumping and hugging and spinning. The music was deafening, each beat of the drums like a hammer to Thomas's skull. Several flashlights had been strung from the ceiling. They swayed back and forth as people swatted them, sending beams of light slashing this way and that. Longhair leaned over and spoke to Thomas as they slowly made their way through the dancers. Thomas could barely hear him, even though he was yelling.
"Thank God for batteries. Life's gonna suck when those run out."
"How did you know my name?" Thomas yelled back. "Why were you waiting for me?" The man laughed.
"We watched you all night. Then this morning, we saw your reaction to the sign through a window. Figured you had to be the famous Thomas."
Brenda had both arms wrapped around Thomas's waist, clinging to him, probably just so they wouldn't get separated. Probably. But when she heard this, she squeezed even tighter. Thomas looked back, saw Blondie and his two friends following on their heels. The gun had been put away, but Thomas knew it could be brought right back out again. The music blared, the bass thumped and rattled the room. People dancing and jumping all around them, the swords of light crisscrossing the dark air. The cranks were slick and shiny with sweat, all that body heat making the room uncomfortably warm. Somewhere right in the middle, Longhair stopped and turned to face them, his odd white mane flopping.
"We really want you to join us," he shouted. "There's got to be something about you. We'll protect you from the bad cranks."
Thomas was glad they didn't know more. Maybe this wouldn't be so bad after all. Play along, pretend to be a special crank, and maybe he and Brenda would get through this long enough to slip away unnoticed at the right time.
"I'll go and get you a drink," Longhair called out. "Enjoy yourselves."
Then he scuttled off, vanishing into the thick, writhing crowd. Thomas turned to see Blondie and his two friends still there, not dancing at all, just watching. Ponytail caught his attention with a wave of her hand.
"Might as well dance," she yelled,
but she didn't follow her own advice. Thomas twisted around until he was fully facing Brenda. They needed to talk. As though she could read his mind, she brought her arms up and wrapped them around his neck, pulling him close until her mouth was right next to his ear, her breath hot and tingling against his sweat.
"How did we get into this piece of crap situation?" she asked.
Thomas didn't know what to do but wrap his arms around her back and waist. He felt her heat through her damp clothes. Something stirred inside him, mixed with guilt and longing for Teresa.
"I never could have imagined this an hour ago,"
he finally said, speaking through her hair. It was the only thing he could think of to say. The song changed, something dark and haunting. The beat had slowed a bit, the drum somewhat deeper. Thomas couldn't make out any words. It was as if the singer were lamenting some horrible tragedy, the voice wailing, high-pitched and sorrowful.
"Maybe we should just stay with these people for a while," Brenda said.
Thomas noticed then that the two of them were dancing, without meaning to or thinking about it. Moving with the music, slowly turning, their bodies pressed tightly together, clasping each other.
"What are you talking about?" he asked, surprised. "You giving up already?"
"No, just tired. Maybe we'd be safer here."
He wanted to trust her, felt like he could, but something about all this worried him. Had she brought him here on purpose? It seemed a stretch.
"Brenda, don't quit on me yet.
The only option we have is to get to the safe haven. There's a cure for this."
Brenda shook her head slightly.
"It's just so hard to believe it's really true. Hard to hope for it."
"Don't say that."
He didn't want to think it, and he didn't want to hear it.
"Why would they have sent all these cranks here if there was a cure? It doesn't make any sense."
Thomas pulled back to look at her, worried about the sudden change in attitude. Her eyes were wet with tears.
"You're talking crazy," he said.
then paused. He had his own doubts, of course, but he didn't want to discourage her.
The cure is real. We have to...
He trailed off, looking over at Blondie, who was still staring at him. The guy probably couldn't hear, but better safe than sorry. Thomas leaned back in to speak directly in Brenda's ear.
We have to get out of here. You want to stay with people who pull guns and screwdrivers on you?
Before she could respond, Longhair was back, a cup in each hand, the brownish liquid inside sloshing as he got bumped from all directions by the dancers.
Drink up! He called out.
Something inside Thomas seemed to wake up then. Taking a drink from these strangers suddenly felt like a very, very bad idea. Impossibly, everything about this place and this situation had become even more uncomfortable. Brenda had already started reaching for a drink, though.
No!
Thomas yelled before he could stop himself, then raced to cover his mistake.
I mean, no, I really don't think we should be drinking that stuff. We've gone a long time without water. We need that first. We just want to dance for a while.
He tried to act casual, but was cringing on the inside, knowing he sounded like an idiot, especially when Brenda gave him a strange look. Something small and hard pressed against his side. He didn't have to turn to see what it was. Blondie's pistol.
I offered you a drink, Longhair said again.
This time, any sign of kindness gone from his tattooed face.
It would be very rude to turn such an offer down.
He held the cups out again. Panic swelled in Thomas. Any small doubt had gone. Something was wrong with the drinks. Blondie pressed the gun into him even harder.
I'm gonna count to one, the man said into his ear. Just one.
Thomas didn't have to think. He reached out and took the cup, poured the liquid in his mouth, swallowed all of it at once. It burned like fire, searing his throat and chest as it went down. He broke into a lurching, racking cough.
Now you, Longhair said, handing the other cup to Brenda.
She looked at Thomas, then took it and drank. It didn't seem to faze her in the least. There was just a slight tightening of her eyes as it went down. Longhair took the empty cups back, a huge grin now spread across his face.
That's just fine. Back to dancing you go.
Thomas already felt something funny in his gut. A soothing warmth, a calmness, growing and spreading through his body. He took Brenda back into his arms, held her tightly as they swayed to the music. Her mouth was against his neck. Every time her lips bumped against his skin, a wave of pleasure shot through him.
What was it? He asked.
He felt, more than heard, the slur in his voice.
Something not good, she said.
He could barely hear her.
Something drugged. It's doing funny things to me.
Yeah, Thomas thought.
Something funny.
The room had begun to spin around him, far faster than their slow turn should have caused it to. People's faces seemed to stretch when they laughed, their mouths gaping black holes. The music slowed and thickened, the singing voice deepened, grew drawn out. Brenda pulled her head away from him, clasped the sides of his face with her hands. She stared at him, though her eyes seemed to jiggle. She looked beautiful, more beautiful than anything he'd ever seen before. Everything around them faded to darkness. His mind was shutting down. He knew it.
Maybe it's better this way, she said.
Her words didn't match her lips. Her face was moving in circles, seemingly detached from her neck.
Maybe we can be with them. Maybe we can be happy until we're past the gone.
She smiled then, a sickening, disturbing smile.
Then you can kill me. No, Brenda,
he said, but his voice seemed a million miles away, as if it were coming from an endless tunnel.
Don't. Kiss me,
she said.
Tom, kiss me.
Her hands tightened on his face. She started to pull him down toward her.
No,
he said, resisting. She stopped, a hurt look washing over her face. Her moving, blurring face.
Why?
She asked. The darkness almost had him fully now.
You're not... her.
His voice, distant, a mere echo.
You could never be her.
And then she fell away. And his mind did the same.
Chapter 38. Thomas awoke to darkness, and it felt as if he had been put into some type of ancient torture device, nails slowly driving into his skull from all directions. He groaned, a halting, terrible sound that only intensified the pain in his head. He forced himself silent, tried to reach up to rub. His hands wouldn't move. Something held them down, something sticky pressing against his wrists. Tape. He tried to kick out with his legs, but they were bound too. The effort sent another wave of pain crashing through his head and body. He went limp, moaning softly. He wondered how long he'd been out.
Brenda?
He whispered. No response. A light came on, bright and stabbing. He squeezed both eyes shut, then opened one just enough to squint through. Three people stood in front of him, but their faces were in shadow, the light source coming from behind.
Wakey, wakey,
a husky voice said. Someone snickered.
Want some more of that fire juice?
This came from a woman. The same person snickered again. Thomas finally grew accustomed to the light and opened his eyes fully. He was in a wooden chair, wide gray tape tightly securing his wrists to the armrests and his ankles to the chair legs. Two men and one woman stood in front of him. Blondie, tall and ugly, ponytail.
Why didn't you just whack me out in the alley?
Thomas asked.
Whack you?
Blondie responded. His voice hadn't seemed husky before. It sounded like he'd spent the last few hours yelling out on the dance floor.
What do you think we are? Some kind of 20th century mafia clan? If we wanted to whack you, you'd already be dead, bleeding in the streets.
We don't want you dead, Ponytail interrupted. That would spoil the meat. We like to eat our victims while they're still breathing. Eat as much as we can before they bleed to death. You wouldn't believe how juicy and sweet that tastes.
Tall and Ugly laughed, but Thomas couldn't tell whether Ponytail was serious. Either way, it freaked him out.
She's kidding, Blondie said. We've only eaten other humans when it's gotten completely desperate. Man meat tastes like pig crap.
Another burst of giggles from Tall and Ugly. Not snickering, not laughing. Giggling. Thomas didn't believe they were serious. He was much more worried about how their minds seemed off. Blondie smiled for the first time since Thomas had met him.
Joking again. We're not quite that cranked out yet. But I do bet people don't taste very good.
Tall and Ugly and Ponytail nodded. Man, these guys are really starting to lose it, Thomas thought. He heard a muffled groan to his left and looked over. Brenda was in a corner of the room, bound just as he was. But her mouth had been taped shut as well, making him wonder if she'd put up more of a fight before she passed out. It looked like she was only now waking up, and when she noticed the three cranks, she shifted and wiggled in her chair, moaning through the gag, her eyes lit with fire. Blondie pointed at her. His pistol had magically appeared.
Shut up! Shut up, or I'll splat your brains on the wall.
Brenda stopped. Thomas expected her to start whimpering or crying or something, but she didn't, and he immediately felt stupid for thinking it. She'd already shown how tough she was. Blondie dropped the gun to his side.
Better. Good God, we should have killed her when she first started screaming up there. And biting.
He looked at his forearm, where the long arc of a welt shone red.
She's with him, Ponytail said. We can't kill her yet.
Blondie pulled a chair from the far wall and took a seat just a few feet in front of Thomas. The others followed suit, looking relieved, as if they'd been waiting hours for permission. Blondie rested the gun on his thigh, its business end pointed straight at Thomas.
Okay, the man said. We've got us quite a lot to talk about. I'm not going through the normal bullcrap with you either. If you mess around or refuse to answer or whatever, I'm going to shoot you in the leg. Then the other one. Third time, a bullet goes into your girlfriend's face. I'm thinking somewhere right between the eyes, and I bet you can guess what happens the fourth time you piss me off. Thomas nodded. He wanted to think he was tough, think he could stand up to these cranks. But common sense won out. He was taped to a chair, no weapons, no allies, nothing. Though honestly, he didn't have anything to hide. He'd answer whatever the guy asked him. Whatever ended up happening, he didn't want any bullets in his leg, and he doubted the guy was bluffing. First question, Blondie said. Who are you, and why is your name on signs all over this piece of crap city?
My name is Thomas.
As soon as it came out, Blondie scrunched up his face in anger. Thomas realized his stupid mistake and hurried along.
You already knew that. Well, how I got here is a really weird story, and I doubt you'll believe it, but I swear I'm telling the truth.
Didn't you come on a berg like the rest of us?
Ponytail asked.
Berg?
Thomas didn't know what that meant, but he just shook his head and went on.
No, we came out of some underground tunnel about 30 miles or so to the south. Before that, we went through something called a flat trans. Before that...
Hold it, Blondie said, holding up a hand. A flat trans? I'd shoot you right now, but there's no way you just made that up.
Thomas wrinkled his brow in confusion.
Why?
You'd be stupid to try getting away with an obvious lie like that. You came through a flat trans?
The man's surprise was obvious. Thomas glanced at the other cranks, both of whom had similar looks of shock on their faces.
Yeah. Why's that so hard to believe?
Do you have any idea how expensive flat transportation is? Before the flares, it had just been revealed to the public. Only governments and billionaires can afford to use it.
Thomas shrugged. Well, I know they have a lot of money, and that's what the guy called it, a flat trans. Kind of a gray wall that tingles like ice when you walk through it.
What guy? Ponytail asked.
Thomas had barely started, and already his mind was jumbled. How could you tell a story like this?
I think he was from Wicked. They're running us through some kind of experiment or test. I don't really know everything. We had our memories wiped out. Some of mine came back, but not a whole lot.
Blondie didn't react for a second, just sat there staring at him. Almost through him, at the wall behind. Finally, he said,
I was a lawyer. Back before the flares and this disease ruined everything. I know when someone's lying. I was very, very good at my job.
Oddly, Thomas relaxed.
Then you know I'm not...
Yeah, I know. I want to hear the whole thing. Start talking.
Thomas did. He couldn't say why, but it seemed okay. His instincts told him these cranks were just like everybody else, sent here to live out their last horrible years succumbing to the flare. They were just trying to find an advantage, find a way out, like anybody would. And meeting a guy who had special signs about him all over the city was an excellent first step. If Thomas had been in their shoes, he'd probably have been doing the same thing. Without the gun and bindings, hopefully. He'd told most of the story to Brenda just the day before, and related it much the same way now. The maze, the escape, the dorms. Being given the mission to cross the Scorch. He took special care to make it sound very important, stressing the part about the cure waiting at the end. Since they'd lost the chance to have Jorge's help getting through the city, maybe he could start over with these people. He also expressed his concern over the other gladers, but when he asked if they'd seen them, or a big group of girls, the answer was no. Once again, he didn't talk much about Teresa. He just didn't want to take any chances of endangering her somehow, though he had no idea how talking about her might do that. He also lied a bit about Brenda. Well, he never really lied directly. He just kind of made it sound like she'd been with him from the beginning. When he finished, ending at the part where they'd met the three people in front of him in the alley, he took a deep breath and adjusted himself in the chair.
Can you please take this tape off me now?
A flick of Tall and Ugly's hand caught his attention, and he looked to see that a very sharp, shiny knife had appeared there.
What do you think?
He asked Blondie. Sure, why not?
He'd held a stoic face throughout the tale, giving no hint yet as to whether he believed the story. Tall and Ugly shrugged and got to his feet, walked over to Thomas. He was just leaning over, knife outstretched, when a commotion broke out above. Hard thumps on the ceiling, followed by a couple of screams. Then it sounded like 100 people running. Frantic footsteps, jumping, more thumps, more screams.
Another group must have found us, Blondie said, his face suddenly pale.
He stood, motioned for the other two to follow him. A few seconds later, they were gone, vanishing up a set of stairs into the shadows. A door opened and closed. The chaos above continued. All of this combined to scare Thomas nearly out of his wits. He looked over at Brenda, who sat peacefully still, listening. Her eyes finally met his gaze. Still gagged, she could only raise her eyebrows. He didn't like their odds being left like this, taped to chairs. There was no way any of the cranks he'd met that night had a chance against ones like Mr. Nose.
What if a bunch of full-gone cranks are up there? He asked.
Brenda mumbled something through the tape. Thomas strained every muscle and started jumping his chair in tiny steps toward where she sat. He'd made it about 3 feet when the sounds of fighting and rumbling suddenly stopped. He froze, looked up at the ceiling. Nothing for several seconds. Then a set of footsteps, maybe two, shuffling across the floor above. A loud thump, another loud thump, then another. Thomas imagined bodies being thrown on the ground. The door at the top of the stairs opened. Then footsteps, hard and heavy, running down. It was all in shadow, and a cold panic flooded Thomas's body as he waited to see who came down. Finally, someone stepped into the light.
Min Ho, dirty and bloody, burn marks on his face, knives in both hands. Min Ho!
You guys look comfy, he said.
Chapter 39.
Despite everything he'd been through, Thomas couldn't remember the last time he'd been at such a loss for words.
What? How?
He stammered, trying to get something out. Min Ho smiled, a very welcome sight, especially considering how horrible the guy looked.
We just found you. Do you think we were going to let these bunch of shuck faces do anything to you? You owe me, big time.
He walked over and started cutting the tape.
What do you mean you just found us?
Thomas was so happy he wanted to giggle like an idiot. Not only were they rescued, his friends were alive. They were alive. Min Ho kept cutting.
Jorge's been leading us through the city, avoiding cranks, finding food.
He finished up with Thomas and went to free Brenda, still talking over his shoulder.
Yesterday morning we kind of spread out, spying here and there. Frypan was peeking around the corner into that alley up there, just as those three shanks pulled a gun on you. He came back, we got mad, started planning our ambush. Most of those shucks were wasted or asleep.
Brenda pushed her way out of the chair and passed Min Ho as soon as her tape was cut. She started toward Thomas, but hesitated. He couldn't tell if she was mad or just worried. Then she came the rest of the way, ripping the tape off her mouth as she reached his side. Thomas stood up, and immediately his head pounded again, the room swaying, making him sick. He plopped back into the chair.
Oh, man. Anybody got some aspirin?
Min Ho only laughed. Brenda had made her way to the bottom of the stairs, where she stood with arms folded. Something about her body language did make her look angry. Then he remembered what he had said to her right before passing out from the drug.
Oh, crap, he thought.
He'd told her she could never be Teresa.
Brenda?
He asked sheepishly.
You okay?
No way he was going to bring up their odd dance and that conversation in front of Min Ho. She nodded, but didn't look back at him.
I'm fine. Let's go. I want to see Jorge.
Short clips for words. No emotion in them. Thomas groaned, glad to have the pain in his head as an excuse. Yeah, she was mad at him. Actually, mad might have been the wrong word. She looked more hurt. Or maybe he assumed too much and she didn't care at all. Min Ho came up to him, offered a hand.
Come on, dude. Headache or no headache, we need to go. No telling how long we can keep the shuck prisoners up there quiet and still.
Prisoners? Thomas repeated.
Whatever you want to call them. We can't risk letting them go until we get out. We've got a dozen guys holding more than 20, and they aren't too happy. They might start thinking they can take us pretty soon, once they get rid of their hangovers.
Thomas stood up again, this time much more slowly. The pain in his head rocked and throbbed like a steady drum, seeming to push on his eyeballs from behind with every thud. He closed his eyes until things quit spinning around him. He sucked in a deep breath, looked at Minho.
I'll be fine.
Minho flashed him a smile.
Such a man. Come on.
Thomas followed his friend to the stairs. He paused beside Brenda but didn't say anything. Minho peered back at Thomas with an expression that said, "What's up with her?" Thomas just shook his head slightly. Minho shrugged, then stomped his way up and out of the room. But Thomas stayed back with Brenda for a second. She didn't seem to want to move just yet, and she refused to meet his eyes.
"I'm sorry," he said, regretting his harsh words right before passing out. "I think I said something kind of mean."
Her eyes snapped up to meet his.
"You think I give a crap about you and your girlfriend? I was just dancing, trying to have some fun before everything went bad. What, you think I'm in love with you or something? Just dying till the day you ask me to be your crank bride? Get over yourself."
Her words were so full of rage that Thomas took a step back, as hurt as if she'd slapped him. Before he could respond, she disappeared upstairs, all heavy footsteps and sighs. He'd never missed Teresa so badly as at that moment. On a whim, he called out to her with his mind. But she still wasn't there. The smell hit him before he even entered the room where they'd danced, like sweat and vomit. Bodies littered the floor, some sleeping, some huddled together and shivering, some even looked dead. Jorge, Newt, and Aris were there, standing guard, slowly turning in circles with knives drawn and pointing. Thomas saw Frypan and the other gladers too. Though his head still throbbed, he felt a rush of relief and excitement.
"What happened to you guys? Where have you been?"
"Hey, it's Thomas," Frypan roared, "as ugly and alive as ever."
Newt came up to him, gave a sincere smile.
"Glad you're not bloody dead, Tommy. I'm really, really glad."
"You too."
Thomas realized with a weird numbness that this was what his life had become. This was how you greeted people after a day or two apart.
"Has everyone made it so far? Where'd you guys go? How'd you get here?"
Newt nodded.
"Still 11 of us, plus Jorge."
Thomas's questions came faster than anyone could answer.
"Any sign of Barkley and the rest of them? Were they the ones who set off the explosion?"
Jorge answered. Thomas saw that he stood closest to the door, holding a very nasty-looking sword that was currently resting on the shoulder of Tall and Ugly himself. Ponytail was next to him, and they were both curled up on the ground.
"Haven't seen him since. We got away pretty quickly, and they're too scared to come deeper into the city."
The sight of Tall and Ugly had set off a small alarm inside Thomas. Blondie. Where was Blondie? How would Minho and the others have dealt with his gun? He looked around but couldn't find him anywhere in the room.
"Minho," Thomas whispered,
then motioned for him to come closer. Once he and Newt were both right next to him, he leaned in.
"The guy with really short blonde hair seemed like the leader. What happened to him?"
Minho shrugged and looked at Newt to answer.
"Must have got out," Newt replied. "A handful did. We couldn't stop all of them."
"Why?" Minho asked. "You worried about him?"
Thomas looked around, lowered his voice even further.
"He had a gun. He's the only one I've seen with something worse than a knife. And he wasn't very nice."
"Who gives a clunk?" Minho said. "We'll be out of this stupid city in an hour. And we should go. Now."
That sounded like the best idea Thomas had heard in days.
"Okay, I want to get out of here before he comes back."
"Listen up,"
Minho called out as he stepped away, walking through the crowd.
"We're leaving now. Don't follow us, you'll be fine. Follow us, you'll be dead.
Pretty easy choice, don't you think?
Thomas wondered when and how Minho had taken back the leadership role from Jorge. He looked over at the older man and noticed Brenda standing silently next to a wall, staring at the floor. He felt so bad about what had happened the night before. He really had wanted to kiss her, but for some reason he'd felt disgusted at the same time. Maybe it was the drug. Maybe it was Teresa. Maybe it was...
Hey, Thomas! Minho was yelling at him. Dude, wake up! We're leaving!
Several gladers had already walked through the door and into the sunlight. How long had he been out from the drug? A full day? Or just a few hours since morning? He moved to follow, stopping by Brenda and giving her a little push. He worried for a second that she wouldn't come with them, but she only hesitated a moment before heading for the door. Minho, Newt, and Jorge waited, keeping guard with their weapons until everyone but Thomas and Brenda were out. Thomas watched at the doorway as the three gladers backed away, slowly sweeping the tips of their knives and swords back and forth as they did so. But it didn't look like anyone was going to put up a fuss. They were all probably ready to move on, just glad to be alive. Everyone gathered in the alley away from the stairs. Thomas stayed close to the top step, but Brenda made her way to the other side of the group. He swore he'd get her alone as soon as they were away and safe, have a long talk. He liked her, wanted to be her friend if nothing else. More importantly, he now felt about her much the way he'd felt about Chuck. For some reason, a feeling of responsibility for her had overcome him.
Make a run for it!
Thomas shook his head, realizing that Minho had been talking. Daggers of pain shot through his skull, but he focused.
There's only about a mile left, Minho continued. These cranks aren't so hard to fight after all, so let's...
Hey!
The shout came from behind Thomas, loud and screechy, filled with more than a hint of lunacy. Thomas spun around to see Blondie standing down on the bottom step by the open door, his arm extended. His white-knuckled fingers held the gun, surprisingly steady and calm. It was pointed directly at Thomas. Before anyone could move, he fired, an explosion that rocked the narrow alley with a thunderous boom. Pure pain ripped through Thomas's left shoulder. Chapter 40. The impact knocked Thomas back, spinning him around so that he fell flat on his face, smacking his nose on the ground. Somehow, through the pain and muffled buzz in his ears, he heard the gun fire again, then the sound of grunts and punches, followed by metal clacking across the cement. He rolled onto his back, hand clasped tight to where he'd been shot. He searched for the courage to look at the wound. The ringing in his ears grew louder, and he barely noticed out of the corner of his eye that Blondie had been tackled to the ground. Someone was punching the living crap out of him. Minho. Thomas finally gazed down at the damage. What he saw there made his heart double its pace. A small hole in his shirt revealed a gooey red blob right in the meaty part above his armpit, blood pouring from the wound. It hurt. It hurt bad. If he'd thought his headache downstairs had been tough, this was like three or four of those all smashed into a coil of pain right there in his shoulder, and spreading through the rest of his body. Newt was at his side, looking down with worried eyes.
He shot me.
It just came out, a new number one on the list of the dumbest things he'd ever said. The pain, like living metal staples running through his insides, pricking and scratching with their little sharp points. He felt his mind going dark for the second time that day. Someone handed a shirt to Newt, who pressed it tightly against Thomas's wound. This sent another wave of agony through him. He cried out, not caring how wimpy he sounded. It hurt like nothing he'd ever felt before. The world around him faded another few degrees. Pass out, he urged himself. Please pass out. Make it go away. Voices came from a distance again, just like his own had on the dance floor after being drugged.
I can get that sucker out of him.
This was Jorge, of all people.
But I'll need a fire. We can't do this here.
Was that Newt?
Let's get out of this shuck city.
Definitely Minho.
All right, help me carry him.
No idea. Hands gripping him from underneath, grasping his legs. The pain.
Someone saying something about the count of three. The pain. It really, really hurt. One, the pain. Two, ouch! Three. He rose toward the sky, and the pain exploded anew, fresh and raw. Then his wish to pass out came true, and darkness washed his troubles away. He awoke, his mind a haze. Light blinded him. He couldn't open his eyes all the way. His whole body jostled and bumped, hands still holding him tight. He heard the sounds of breathing, heavy and fast. Feet pounding on pavement. Someone shouting, though he couldn't understand the words. In the distance, the mad screams of cranks, close enough that they might be pursuing. Heat. The air was burning hot. His shoulder, on fire. Pain tore through him like a series of toxic explosions, and he fled to the darkness once again. He cracked his eyes. This time, the light was much less intense. The golden gleam of twilight. He lay on his back, the ground beneath him hard. A rock dug into his lower back, but it felt heavenly compared to the rod in his shoulder. People lumbered about him, talking in short and tight whispers. The cackle of cranks had grown more distant. He saw nothing but sky above him. No buildings. Pain in his shoulder. Oh, the pain. A fire licked and spit somewhere close. He felt the heat wafting across his body. Hot wind through hot air. Someone said, "You better hold him down, legs and arms." Though his mind still floated in fog, those words didn't sound good. A flash of light on silver in his vision, the fading sun's reflection on a knife? Was it glowing red? "This is gonna hurt something awful." No idea who said it. He heard the hiss right before a billion pounds of dynamite exploded in his shoulder. His mind said goodbye for the third time. He sensed that a long spell of time had passed this go-around. When he opened his eyes again, stars like pinpricks of daylight shone down from the dark sky. Someone held his hand. He tried to turn his head to look over, but it sent a fresh wave of agony shooting down his spine. He didn't need to see. It was Brenda. Who else would it be? Plus, the hand was soft and small. Brenda, for sure. The intense pain of before had been replaced. In some ways, he now felt worse. Something like an illness crept through the inner workings of his body. A gnawing, itching filthiness. Something foul, like maggots squirming through his veins and the hollows of his bones and between his muscles, eating away at him. It hurt, but now it was more of an ache, deep and raw. His stomach, gurgly and unstable, fire in his veins. He didn't know how he knew, but he was sure of it. Something was wrong. The word infection popped up in his mind, then stayed there. He drifted off. The sunrise woke Thomas in the morning. The first thing he realized was that Brenda no longer held his hand. Then he noticed the cool air of early morning on his skin, which gave him the briefest moment of pleasure. Then he became fully aware of the throbbing pain that consumed his body, dwelling in every last molecule. It no longer had anything to do with his shoulder and the bullet wound. Something terrible had gone wrong with his entire system. Infection. That word again. He didn't know how he'd make it through the next 5 minutes, or the next hour. How could he possibly go through an entire day? Then sleep and start the whole thing all over again. Despair sucked at him, an empty, yawning void that threatened to pull him down into an awful abyss. A panic-laced craziness struck him, suffusing it all, the pain. That was when things got bizarre. The others heard it before he did. Minho and everyone else were suddenly scrambling, searching for something, many of them scanning the sky. The sky? Why would they be doing that? Someone, Jorge, he thought, yelled the word Berg.
Then Thomas heard it, a deep thrumming, full of heavy thumps. It grew louder before he even realized what was going on, and soon it felt as though the noise were inside his skull, rattling his jaw and eardrums and sluicing down his spine. A constant, steady pounding like the world's largest drums. Behind it all, the massive hum of heavy machinery. A wind picked up, and at first Thomas worried that a storm was starting again, but the sky was perfectly blue. Not a cloud to be seen. The noise worsened his pain, made him begin to shut down again. But he fought it, desperate to know the source of the sounds. Minho shouted something, pointed to the north. Thomas hurt too much to turn and look. The wind grew stronger, gusting across him, ripping at his clothes. Dust flew and clouded the air. Suddenly, Brenda was beside him again, squeezing his hand. She leaned over until her face was only inches above his. Her hair whipped all around.
"I'm sorry," she said, though he barely heard her. "I didn't mean to. I mean, I know that you—"
She fumbled for words, looked away. What was she talking about? Why didn't she tell him what was making that horrible noise? He hurt so bad. A look of curious horror spread across her face, eyes widening, mouth dropping open. And then she was being pushed away by two— Panic seized Thomas now, two people dressed in the strangest outfits he'd ever seen, one piece, baggy and dark green, letters he couldn't read scrawled across the chest. Goggles covering their faces. No, not goggles. Some kind of gas mask. They looked hideous and alien. They looked evil, like giant, demented, human-eating insects wrapped in plastic. One of them grabbed his legs by the ankles. The other put his hands under him, gripped him by the armpits, and Thomas screamed. They lifted, and pain went coursing through his body. He'd almost grown used to the agony by now, but this felt even worse. It hurt too much to struggle. So he went limp. Then they were moving, carrying him, and for the first time, Thomas's eyes focused enough to read the letters on the chest of the person at his feet. Wicked. Darkness threatened to take him again. He let it, but the pain went with him. Chapter 41. Once again, he woke to a blinding white light, this one shining directly into his eyes from above. He knew immediately it wasn't the sun. It was different. Plus, it shone from only a short distance away. Even as he clenched his eyes shut again, the afterimage of a bulb floated across the darkness. He heard voices, more like whispers. He couldn't understand a word. Too soft, just out of reach enough that they were impossible to decipher. He heard the click and clack of metal against metal. Small sounds, and the first thing he thought of was medical instruments. Scalpels and those little rods with mirrors on the end. These images swam up from the murkiness of his memory bank, and combining them with a light, he knew. He'd been taken to a hospital. A hospital. The last thing he could ever imagine existing anywhere in the Scorch. Or had he been taken away, far away, through a flat trans, maybe. A shadow crossed the light, and Thomas opened his eyes. Someone was looking down at him, dressed in the same ridiculous outfit as those who'd brought him here. The gas mask, or whatever it was. Big goggles. Behind the protective glass, he saw dark eyes focused on him. A woman's eyes, though he didn't know how he could tell.
"Can you hear me?" she asked.
Yes, a woman, even though the mask muffled her voice. Thomas tried to nod, didn't know if he actually did or not.
"This wasn't supposed to happen."
She pulled her head back a bit and looked away, which made Thomas think she hadn't meant that comment for him.
"How'd a working gun get in the city? You have any idea the amount of rust and gunk must have been on that bullet? Not to mention the germs."
She sounded very angry. A man replied, "Just get on with it. We have to send him back, quickly." Thomas barely had time to process what they were saying. A new pain blossomed in his shoulder, unbearable. He passed out for the umpteenth time. Awake again. Something was off. He couldn't tell what.
The same light shone from the same spot above. He looked to the side this time instead of closing his eyes. He could see better, focus more. Silver squares of ceiling tile, a steel contraption with all kinds of dials and switches and monitors. None of it made sense. Then it hit him. Hit him with such shock and wonder that he scarcely believed it could be true. He felt no pain. None. Nothing at all. No people stood around him, no crazy green alien suits, no goggles, no one sticking scalpels in his shoulder. He seemed to be alone, and the absence of pain was pure ecstasy. He didn't know it was possible to feel this good. It wasn't. Had to be a drug. He dozed off. He stirred at the sound of soft voices, though it came through the haze of his drugged stupor. Somehow, he knew enough to keep his eyes shut, see if he could learn anything about the people who'd taken him. The people who'd evidently fixed him up and rid his body of the infection. A man was talking. "Are you sure this doesn't screw anything up?"
"I'm positive."
This from a woman.
"Well, as positive as I can be. If anything, it may stimulate a pattern in the kill zone that we hadn't expected. A bonus, possibly? I can't imagine it leading him or anyone else in a direction that would prevent the other patterns we're looking for."
"Dear God above, I hope you're right," the man responded. Another woman spoke, her voice high, almost crystalline.
"How many of the ones left do you think are still viable candidates?"
Thomas sensed the capital letter in that word, candidates. Confused, he tried to remain still. Listen.
"We're down to 4 or 5, the first woman answered.
"Thomas here is by far our greatest hope. He responds really sharply to the variables. Wait, I think I just saw his eyes move."
Thomas froze, tried to stare straight ahead into the darkness of his eyelids. It was hard, but he forced himself to breathe evenly, as if asleep. He didn't know exactly what these people were talking about, but he desperately wanted to hear more. Knew he needed to hear more. "Who cares if he's listening?" the man asked. "He couldn't possibly understand enough to affect his responses one way or the other. It'll do him good to know we made a huge exception to get that infection out of him. That Wicked will do what it has to when necessary." The high-pitched voice lady laughed, one of the most pleasant sounds Thomas had ever heard.
"If you're listening, Thomas, don't get too excited. We're about to dump you right back where we took you from."
The drugs coursing through Thomas's veins seemed to surge, and he felt himself fading into bliss. He tried to open his eyes, but couldn't. Before he drifted off, he did hear one last thing from the first woman, something very odd.
"It's what you would have wanted us to do."
Chapter 42. The mysterious people were true to their word. The next time Thomas woke up, he was hanging in the air, strung tightly to a canvas litter with handles, swaying back and forth. A large rope attached to a ring of blue metal held him as he was lowered from something huge, the whole time accompanied by the same explosion of hums and heavy thumps that he'd heard when they'd come to get him. He gripped the sides of the litter, terrified. Finally, he felt a soft bump, and then a million faces appeared around him. Minho, Newt, Jorge, Brenda, Frypan, Eris, the other gladers. The rope holding him detached and sprang up into the air. Then, almost instantaneously, the vessel from which he'd been lowered vaulted away, disappearing into the brilliance of the sun directly overhead. The sounds of its engines faded, and soon it was gone. Then everyone spoke at once.
"What was that all about? Are you okay? What did they do to you? Who was that? Have fun in the burg? How's your shoulder?"
Thomas ignored it all and tried to get up, but realized that the ropes holding him to the litter still bound him tightly to it. He found Minho with his eyes. "A little help here?" As Minho and a couple of others worked on untying him, Thomas had a disturbing thought. The people from Wicked had shown up to save him pretty quickly. From what they'd said, it was something they hadn't planned on, but they'd done it anyway. Which meant they were watching and could swoop in to save them whenever they wanted to. But they hadn't until now.
How many people had died in the last few days while Wicked stood by and watched? And why did that change for Thomas just because he'd been shot by a rusty bullet? It was too much to think about. Once freed, he got to his feet and stretched out his muscles, refusing to acknowledge the second volley of questions flung his way. The day was hot, brutally hot, and as he stretched, he realized that he felt no pain other than the slightest of aches in his shoulder. He looked down to see that he was wearing fresh clothes and that there was the bulge of a bandage under the left sleeve of his shirt. But his thoughts immediately went to something else. "What are you guys doing out in the open? Your skin is going to bake." Minho didn't answer, just pointed at something behind him, and Thomas looked to see a very shabby hut. It was made out of dry wood that seemed like it might crumble to pure dust at any second, but it was big enough to provide shelter for everyone there.
"We better get back under that thing," Minho said.
Thomas realized that they must have run out just to see him delivered from the huge flying berg? Jorge had called it a berg. The group trekked over to the shelter. Thomas told them a dozen times that he'd explain everything from beginning to end once they were settled. Brenda found him, walked right next to him. But she didn't offer her hand, and Thomas felt an uneasy relief. She also didn't say anything, and neither did he. The miserable city of the Cranks lay a few miles distant, huddling in all its decay and madness to the south. No sign of the infected people anywhere. To the north, the mountains loomed now, only a day or so away. Craggy and lifeless, they sloped up higher and higher until they ended in jagged brown peaks. Harsh cuts in the rock made the whole range appear as though a giant had hacked at it with a massive axe for days and days, letting out all its giant frustration. They reached the shelter, the wood dry as rotted bone. It looked as if it had stood there for 100 years, maybe built by a farmer in the days before the world was ravaged. How it had withstood everything was a complete mystery. But one flick of a match, and the thing would probably burn down in 3 seconds.
"All right," Minho said, pointing to a spot in the far end of the shade. "You sit there, get yourself all nice and comfy, and start talking."
Thomas couldn't believe how good he felt, just a dull ache in his shoulder. And he didn't think he had any trace of drugs in him anymore. Whatever doctors Wicked had unleashed on him had been brilliant at what they did. He took a seat and waited for everyone to get situated in front of him, sitting cross-legged on the hot and dusty ground. He was like a schoolteacher readying to give a lesson, a blurry flash from his past. Minho was the last to take a seat right next to Brenda.
"Okay, tell us about your adventures with the aliens and their big bad spaceship."
"You sure about this?" Thomas asked.
"How many days left to get over those mountains to the safe haven?"
5 days, dude.
"But you know we can't go tramping around in this sun with nothing to protect us.
You're going to talk. Then we're going to sleep. Then we're all going to bust our humps walking all night. Get on it."
"Good that," Thomas said, wondering what they'd been doing while he was away, but realizing it didn't matter all that much.
"Save all your questions till the end, children."
When not a single person laughed or even smiled, he coughed and hurried on.
"It was Wicked that came and got me. I kept passing out, but they took me to some doctors who totally fixed me up. I heard them saying something about how it wasn't supposed to happen, how the gun had been a factor they hadn't expected. The bullet set off a nasty infection in me, and I guess they felt pretty strongly that it wasn't time for me to die."
Blank faces stared back at him. Thomas knew it would be hard for them to accept, even after he'd told the whole story.
"Just telling you what I heard."
He went on to explain more. Every detail of what he could remember, and about the odd bedside conversation he'd listened in on. Things about kill zone patterns and candidates. More about the variables. None of it had made much sense the first time around, and it made even less now as he tried to recall it word for word. The Gladers, plus Jorge and Brenda, looked as frustrated as he felt.
"Well, that really cleared things up," Minho finally said. "Must have something to do with all those signs about you in the city."
Thomas shrugged.
"Glad to know you're so happy to see me alive. Hey, if you want to be the leader, no skin off my back.
I am happy to see you alive.
No thanks. You keep it. Minho didn't respond. Thomas couldn't deny that the signs weighed heavily on him. What did it really mean that Wicked wanted him to be the leader? And what should he do about it?
Newt got to his feet, his face in a deep scowl of concentration.
So, we're all potential candidates for something. And maybe the purpose of all the bug and clunk we've been through is to weed out those who don't qualify. But for some reason, the whole gun and rusty bullet thing wasn't part of the normal tests? Or variables, whatever? If Thomas is going to croak and die, it wasn't supposed to come from a bloody infection.
Thomas pursed his lips and nodded. Sounded like a great summary to him.
What this means is that they're watching us, Minho said. Just like they did in the maze. Has anyone seen a beetle blade running around anywhere?
Several gladers shook their heads.
What the hell's a beetle blade? Jorge asked.
Thomas answered. Little mechanical lizard things that spied on us with cameras in the maze. Jorge rolled his eyes.
Of course. Sorry I asked.
The maze was definitely some kind of indoor facility, Eris said. But there's just no way we're inside something anymore. Though they could be using satellites or long-range cameras, I guess. Jorge cleared his throat.
What is it about Thomas that makes him so special? Those signs in the city about him being the real leader, them swooping in here and saving his butt when he got all sicky-sicky.
He looked at Thomas.
I'm not trying to be mean, muchacho. I'm just curious. What makes you better than the rest of your buddies?
I'm not special, Thomas said, even though he knew he was hiding something. He just didn't know what. You heard what they said. We have lots of ways to die out here, but that gun shouldn't be one of them. I think they would have saved anybody who'd gotten shot. It wasn't about me, it was the bullet that messed things up.
Still, Jorge replied with a smirk, I think I'll stay close to you from here on.
A few more discussions broke out, but Minho didn't let them last long. He insisted that they all needed sleep if they were planning on marching through the night. Thomas didn't complain. He'd grown more tired with every passing second of sitting in that hot air on that hot ground. Maybe it was his body healing, maybe just the heat. Either way, sleep called to him. They didn't have blankets or pillows, so Thomas curled up on the ground in the very spot where he'd been sitting, resting his head on his folded arms. Brenda somehow ended up right next to him, though she didn't say anything, and she certainly didn't touch him. Thomas didn't know if he'd ever figure her out. He sucked in a long, slow breath, closed his eyes, then welcomed the rest, welcomed that heavy feeling of slumber as it started pulling him into its depths. The sounds around him seemed to fade away, the air to thicken. A calm came over him, then sleep. The sun was still blazing in the sky when a voice sounded in his mind, waking him up. A girl's voice. Teresa. After days and days of utter silence, Teresa started talking to him telepathically, all at once, a rush of words.
Tom, don't even try to talk back, just listen. Something terrible is going to happen to you tomorrow. An awful, awful thing. You're going to be hurt and you're going to be scared, but you have to trust me. No matter what happens, no matter what you see, no matter what you hear, no matter what you think, you have to trust me. I won't be able to talk to you.
She paused. But Thomas was so stunned and trying so hard to understand what she'd said, make sure he remembered it, that he couldn't get a word in before she started up again.
I have to go. You won't hear from me for a while.
Another pause.
Not until we're back together.
He fumbled for something to say, but her voice and her presence slipped away, leaving him empty once more. Chapter 43. It took a long time for Thomas to find sleep again. He had no doubt it had been Teresa. None at all. Just like before when they'd spoken to each other, he'd felt her presence, sensed her emotions. She'd been with him, even if it had been for such a short time. And when she left, it was like opening up that vast void within all over again. As if during the days since her disappearance, a thick liquid had slowly seeped in and filled that chamber, only to have it all sucked out again when she came and went. What had she meant anyway?
Something awful was going to happen to him, but he needed to trust her? He couldn't wrap his mind around that enough for it to make any sense. And as awful as her warning sounded, his thoughts kept drifting to the last part about them being together again. Was that some string of false hope? Or did it mean she thought he'd make it through the bad thing and end up okay? Reunited with her. Possibilities raced through his mind, but they all seemed to hit a depressing dead end. The day only got hotter and hotter as he tossed and turned, haunted by his thoughts. He'd almost grown used to Teresa's being gone, which made him sick to his stomach. To make it worse, he felt like he'd betrayed her by letting Brenda become his friend, by growing so close to her. Ironically, his first instinct was to reach out and wake Brenda, talk to her about it. Was that wrong? He felt so frustrated and stupid he wanted to scream. All great for someone trying to fall back asleep in the miserable heat. The sun had trudged halfway to the horizon before he finally did. He felt a little better in the late evening when Newt shook him awake. Teresa's brief visit to his mind seemed like a dream now. He could almost believe it had never happened. "Sleep well, Tommy," Newt asked. "How's that shoulder?" Thomas sat up, rubbed his eyes. Though he couldn't have slept for more than 3 or 4 hours, his sleep had been deep and undisturbed. He rubbed his shoulder to test it and was surprised all over again. "Feels really good, actually. Aches a little, but not much. Hard to believe I was hurting so bad before." Newt looked around at the gladers preparing to leave, then back at Thomas.
"Feels like we haven't talked much since leaving the bloody dorm. Not much time to sit around and sip tea, I guess."
"Yeah." For some reason, this made Thomas think of Chuck, and all the pain of his death came rushing back, which just made him hate the people behind all this all over again. The line from Teresa came back to him. "I don't see how Wicked can be good."
"Huh?"
Remember what Teresa had written on her arm when she first woke up? Or did you even know about that? It said, "Wicked is good."
"I'm just finding that hard to believe."
The sarcasm in his voice wasn't subtle. Newt had a strange smile on his face.
"Well, they just saved your boogin' life."
"Yeah, they're real saints." Thomas couldn't deny he was confused. They had saved his life. He also knew he'd worked for them. But what it all meant, he had no idea. Brenda, who had been stirring in her sleep, now finally sat up, letting out a big yawn.
"Morning, or evening, whatever."
"Another day alive," Thomas answered, then realized Newt might have no idea who Brenda was. He really had no idea what had happened in the group since he'd been shot. "I'm assuming you guys had time to get to know each other. If not, Brenda, this is Newt. Newt, Brenda."
"Yeah, we know already."
Newt reached out and shook her hand mockingly.
"But thanks again for making sure this bloody sissy didn't get his butt killed while you two were out partying."
The barest hint of a smile flashed across her face.
"Partying, yeah. I especially loved the part where we had people trying to cut our noses off."
A look flashed across her face, part embarrassment, part despair.
"Guess it won't be long before I'm one of those psychos."
Thomas didn't know how to respond to that.
"You're probably not that much farther along than us. Remember that—"
Brenda wouldn't let him finish.
"Yeah, I know. You guys are going to take me to the magical cure, I know."
She got up then, the conversation obviously over. Thomas looked at Newt, who shrugged. Then, as he got to his knees, he leaned in and whispered,
"She your new girlfriend? I'm telling Teresa."
He snickered to himself and was gone. Thomas sat there for a minute, overwhelmed by it all. Teresa, Brenda, his friends, the warning he'd received, the flare, the fact that they only had a few days to cross those mountains, Wicked, whatever waited for them at the safe haven and in the future. Too much. It was all too much. He had to stop thinking. He was hungry, and that he could solve. So he got up and went searching for something to eat. And Fry Pan didn't disappoint. They set off just as the sun dipped below the horizon, making the dusty orange land look almost purple. Thomas was cramped and tired, itching to walk off some steam and loosen his muscles. The mountain slowly became jagged peaks of shadow, growing taller and taller as they walked. There were no real foothills to speak of. The flat valley just stretched forward until the ground erupted toward the sky in sheer cliffs and steep slopes. All brown and ugly, lifeless. Thomas hoped an obvious path would present itself once they'd made it that far. No one spoke much as they marched along. Brenda stayed close but quiet. She didn't even talk to Jorge. Thomas hated how it was now, how suddenly everything was awkward between him and Brenda. He liked her, probably more than he liked anyone else now besides Newt and Min-Ho, and Teresa, of course. Newt approached him after darkness had fallen, the stars and moon their only guides. Their light was enough. You didn't need much when the ground was flat and all you had to do was walk toward the looming wall of rock in front of you. The crunch, crunch, crunch of their footsteps on the earth filled the air.
"Been thinking," Newt said.
"About what?" Thomas didn't really care. He was just glad to have someone to talk to and get his mind off things.
"Wicked. You know, they broke their own bloody rules with you."
"How's that?"
"They said there were no rules. Said we had so much time to get to the bloody safe haven, and that was that. No rules. People dying left and right. But then they come down in a buggin' monster flying thing and save your butt. Doesn't make sense."
He paused.
"Not that I'm complaining. I'm glad you're alive and all."
"Gee, thanks." Thomas knew it was a good point, but he was tired of thinking about it.
"And then there were all those signs in the city. Weird."
Thomas looked over at Newt, barely able to see his friend's face.
"What, you jealous or something?"
he asked, trying to make a joke out of it, trying to ignore the fact that the signs had to be a big deal. Newt laughed.
"No, you shank. Just dying to know what's really going on around here. What this is really all about."
"Yeah," Thomas nodded. He couldn't agree more. The lady said only a few of us were good enough to be candidates. And she did say I was the best candidate, and they didn't want me dying from something they hadn't planned. But I don't know what it all means. It has something to do with all that clunk about kill zone patterns. They walked on for a minute or so before Newt spoke again.
"Not worth busting your brains out, I guess. What's going to happen will happen."
Thomas almost told him then about what Teresa had said in his mind, but for some reason, it just didn't feel right. He stayed silent, and eventually, Newt drifted away, until once again, Thomas walked alone in the dark. A couple of hours passed before he had another conversation, this time with Min-Ho. A lot of words flew back and forth between them, but in the end, they hadn't really said much. Just passing time, rehashing the same questions they'd all gone over in their minds a million times. Thomas's legs were a little tired, but not too bad. The mountains got ever closer. The air cooled considerably, and it felt wonderful. Brenda remained silent and distant. And on they went. When the first traces of dawn turned the sky a deep, dark blue, the stars beginning to wink away for the coming day, Thomas finally got the nerve to approach Brenda and talk about something, anything. The cliffs loomed now, dead trees and chunks of scattered rock coming into focus. They'd reached the foot of the mountains by the time the sun popped over the horizon, Thomas was sure of it.
"Hey," he said to her, "how are your feet holding up?"
"Fine."
It came out curt, but then she quickly spoke again, maybe trying to make up for it.
"How about you? Your shoulders seem okay?"
"I can't believe how fine it is. Doesn't hurt much at all."
"That's good."
"Yeah."
He racked his brain trying to think of something to say.
"So, I'm sorry about all the weird stuff that happened, and for anything I said. My head's all kinds of crazy and messed up."
She looked over at him, and he could see a bit of softness in her eyes.
"Please, Thomas, the last thing you need to do is apologize."
She returned her gaze up ahead.
"We're just different. Plus, you have that girlfriend of yours. I shouldn't have tried to kiss you and all that crap."
"She's not really my girlfriend." He regretted saying it as soon as it came out. Didn't even know where it had come from. Brenda huffed.
"Don't be dumb, and don't insult me. If you're gonna resist this...
She paused and gestured to herself with a sweep of her hands from head to toe with a mocking smile.
Then it better be for a good reason.
Thomas laughed. All the tension and awkwardness had just vanished completely.
Point taken.
You're probably a crappy kisser anyway. She punched him in the arm, luckily his good one.
You couldn't possibly be more wrong. Trust me on that one.
Thomas was just about to say something stupid when he stopped dead in his tracks. Somebody almost ran into him from behind, tripped around to his side, but he couldn't tell who. His eyes were glued in front of him, his heart completely frozen. The sky had lightened considerably, and the leading edge of the mountain slope lay just a few hundred feet away. Halfway between here and there, a girl had seemingly appeared out of nowhere, rising from the ground, and she was walking toward them at a brisk pace. In her hands, she held a long shaft of wood with a large, nasty-looking blade lashed to one end. It was Teresa. Chapter 44. Thomas didn't quite know how to compute what he saw. He felt no surprise or joy at Teresa's being alive. He'd already known that she was. She'd spoken to his mind just the day before. But seeing her in the flesh still lifted his spirits. Until he remembered her warning that something bad was going to happen. Until he thought about the fact that she was holding a bladed spear. The other gladers noticed right after he did, and soon everyone had stopped to gawk at Teresa as she marched toward them, her hands gripping that weapon, her face hard as stone. She looked ready to start stabbing the first thing that moved. Thomas took a step forward, not really sure what he planned to do. But then more movement stopped him. On both sides of Teresa, girls appeared. They, too, seemed to come from nowhere. He turned to look behind him. They were surrounded by at least 20 girls. And they all held weapons, varying knives and rusty swords and jagged machetes. Several of the girls had bows and arrows, their menacing tips already aimed at the group of gladers. Thomas felt an uneasy slice of fear. Regardless of what Teresa had said about something bad happening, surely she wouldn't let these people hurt them, right? Group B popped into his mind, and his tattoo saying how they were supposed to kill him. His thoughts were cut short when Teresa stopped about 30 feet away from the group. Her companions did the same, forming a complete circle around the gladers. Thomas turned again to take it all in. Each one of their new visitors stood stiffly, eyes squinted, weapons held out in front and ready. The bows scared him the most. He and the others would have no chance to do anything before those arrows could fly and find a home inside someone's chest. He stopped, facing Teresa. Her eyes were focused on him. Min-ho spoke first.
"What's this crap about, Teresa? Nice way to greet your long-lost buddies."
At the mention of the name Teresa, Brenda spun and looked sharply at Thomas. He gave her a quick nod, and the surprise on her face made him sad for some reason. Teresa didn't answer the question, and an eerie silence swept across the group. The sun continued to rise, inching toward the point where its heat would beat down on them unbearably. Teresa walked toward them again and stopped about 10 feet from where Min-ho and Newt stood side by side.
"Teresa," Newt asked. "What the bloody—"
"Shut up,"
Teresa said. She didn't snap or yell it. She said it calmly and with conviction, which only made it that much more frightening to Thomas.
"And any of you makes a move, the bows start shooting."
Teresa brought her spear up to a better fighting position, swept it back and forth as she stepped past Newt and Min-ho and through the gladers, acting as if she was searching for something. She came to Brenda, paused. Neither said a word, but the hatred between them was visible. Teresa moved past her, never dropping her icy stare. And then she was in front of Thomas. He tried to tell himself that she'd never use that weapon on him, but believing it wasn't easy when you were looking at the blade's sharp edge.
"Teresa,"
he whispered before he could stop himself. Despite the spear, despite the hard look on her face, despite the way her muscles tensed as if she was about to slash him, all he wanted was to reach out to her. He couldn't help but remember the kiss she'd given him, the way it had felt.
She didn't move, just kept staring at him, her face unreadable except for the obvious anger there.
Teresa, what's... Shut up.
That same voice of calm, of utter command. It didn't sound like her. But what... Teresa reared back and swung the butt of her spear at him, smashing it right into his right cheek. An explosion of pain shot through his skull, his neck. He crumpled to his knees, a hand to his face where she'd hit him. I said shut up. She reached down and grabbed him by the shirt, jerked up until he stood once again. She repositioned her hands on the wooden shaft, pointed it at him. Is your name Thomas? He gaped at her. His world was crashing in on him, even though he told himself she'd warned him. Told him that no matter what, he had to trust her.
You know who I...
She swung the spear even more violently this time, crashing the bladeless end into the side of his head, right on his ear. The pain was twice as bad as the first hit. He cried out, clutching his head. But he didn't fall this time.
You know who I am! He screamed. I used to, anyway.
She said in a voice that was both soft and disgusted.
Now I'm going to ask you one more time. Is your name Thomas?
Yes, he yelled back at her.
My name is Thomas.
Teresa nodded, then started to back away from him, the tip of the blade once again aimed at his chest. People got out of her way as she passed the group and rejoined the circle of girls who surrounded them.
You're coming with us, she called out. Thomas, come on. Remember, anyone tries something, the arrows fly.
No way, Minho yelled. You're not taking him anywhere. Teresa acted as if she hadn't heard him, her eyes riveted to Thomas in that strange, squinty-eyed stare.
This isn't some stupid game. I'm going to start counting. Every time I hit a multiple of five, we'll kill one of you with an arrow. We'll do it until Thomas is the only one left, then we'll take him anyway. It's up to you.
For the first time, Thomas noticed that Eris was acting strange. He stood just a few feet to Thomas's right, and he kept turning in a slow circle, staring at the girls one by one as if he knew them each well. But somehow he kept his mouth shut.
Of course, Thomas thought. If this really was Group B, Eris had been with them. He did know them.
One! Teresa shouted. Thomas wasn't taking any chances. He walked forward, pushing past people until he reached the open, then went straight toward Teresa. He ignored the comments from Minho and the others. He ignored everything. Eyes on Teresa, trying to show no emotion, he walked until he stood almost nose to nose with her. It was what he wanted anyway, right? He wanted to be with her. Even if she'd been turned against him somehow. Even if she was being manipulated by Wicked like Albi and Galli had been. For all he knew, her memory had been wiped again. Didn't matter. She looked serious, and he couldn't risk having someone shoot one of his friends with a bow and arrow. Fine, he said. Take me.
I only made it to one.
Yeah, I'm really brave that way. She hit him with the spear, so hard that he couldn't help but drop to the ground again. His jaw and head ached like smoldering fire. He spit, saw blood splatter on the dirt.
Bring the bag, Teresa said from above.
In his peripheral vision, he saw two girls walking toward him, their weapons hidden away somewhere. One of them, a dark-skinned girl with hair cut almost to her scalp, held a large frayed burlap sack. They stopped 2 feet from him. He got back to his hands and knees, scared to do anything more for fear of getting pummeled again.
We're taking him with us, Teresa yelled. If anybody follows, I'll hit him again, and we'll start shooting you. We won't really bother aiming. Just let the arrows fly any old way they feel like. Teresa!
Minho's voice.
You catch the flare that quickly? Your mind's obviously gone already.
The butt of the spear smashed into the back of Thomas's head. He collapsed onto his stomach, black stars swimming in the dirt inches from his face. How could she do this to him?
Anything else you want to say? Teresa asked.
After a long moment of silence, she said,
Didn't think so. Put the bag over him.
Hands roughly grabbed his shoulder and spun him onto his back, Their grip dug into his bullet wound enough to send a deep ache flashing through his upper body for the first time since Wicket had fixed him up. He moaned. Faces, they didn't even look angry, hovered over him as two girls held the open end of the sack directly above his head.
"Don't resist," the dark-skinned girl said, her face shining with sweat. "Oh, it'll just get worse."
Thomas was perplexed. Her eyes and voice held genuine sympathy for him. But her next words couldn't have been more different.
"Better just to go along and let us kill you. Doesn't do any good to have a lot of pain along the way."
The bag slipped over his head, and all he could see was ugly brown light. Chapter 45. They shifted him around on the ground till they got the bag slipped entirely over his body. Then they tied the open end at his feet with a rope, knotting it tight and wrapping its ends up and around the rest of him, pinning him inside the bag, cinching another knot just over his head. Thomas felt the bag going taut. Then his head was pulled up. He imagined girls holding either end of this impossibly long rope, which could only mean one thing. They were going to drag him. He couldn't take it anymore, started squirming even though he knew what it'd get him.
"Teresa, don't do this to me!"
This time a fist hit him right in the stomach, making him howl. He tried to double over, tried to clutch his middle, but he couldn't because of the stupid bag. Nausea swept through him. He fought it, kept his food down.
"Since you obviously don't care about yourself," Teresa said, "talk again and we'll start shooting your friends. That sound good to you?"
Thomas didn't respond. He heaved a silent sob of agony. Had he really been thinking things were looking up in the world only yesterday? His infection cured and his wound healed, away from the city of Cranks. Nothing but a swift and hard hike through the mountains between them and the safe haven. He should have known better after everything he'd been through.
"I meant what I said," Teresa yelled at the gladers. "There won't be a warning. Follow us and the arrows start flying."
Thomas saw her outline as she knelt next to him, heard her knees crunching on the dirt. Then she grabbed him through the material of the bag, put her head against his, her mouth just half an inch from his ear. She started whispering, so faintly he had to strain to hear, concentrating to separate her words from the breeze.
"They're blocking me from talking to you in our heads. Remember to trust me."
Thomas, surprised, had to fight to keep his mouth shut.
"What are you saying to him?"
This came from one of the girls holding the rope attached to the bag.
"I'm letting him know just how much I'm enjoying this, how much I'm enjoying my revenge. Do you mind?"
Thomas had never heard such arrogance from her. She was either a really good actress or had started going crazy, gained a split personality or two.
"Well," the other girl responded, "glad you're having so much fun, but we need to hurry."
"I know,"
Teresa said. She gripped the sides of Thomas's head even harder, squeezed and shook it. Then she pressed her mouth against the rough material, pushing on his ear. When she spoke again with that hot whisper, he could feel her hot breath through the weave of the burlap.
"Hang in there. It'll be over soon."
The words numbed Thomas's brain. He had no idea what to think. Was she being sarcastic? She released him and stood back up.
"Okay, let's get out of here. Make sure you hit as many rocks as you can along the way."
His captors started walking, dragging him along behind them. He felt the rough ground below him as he was dragged across it, the big sack providing absolutely no protection. It hurt. He arched his back, putting all his weight on his feet, letting his shoes bear the brunt of the impacts. But he knew his strength couldn't hold out forever. Teresa walked right beside him as they pulled his body along. He could just make her out through the burlap. Then Minho started yelling, his voice already fading with distance, the sound of being dragged against the dirt making it that much harder to hear. What Thomas did hear, however, gave him little hope. Between garbled, unflattering names, Thomas heard the words, "We'll find you," and "Time is right," and "Weapons." Teresa slammed her fist into Thomas's stomach again, shutting Minho up. And across the desert they went, Thomas bouncing over the dirt like a sack of old clothes. Thomas imagined horrible things as they went along. His legs were weakening every second, and he knew he'd have to lower his body to the ground soon. He pictured the bleeding wounds, the permanent scars. But maybe it wouldn't matter. They planned on killing him anyway. Teresa had said to trust her, and even though he had a hard time doing it, he was trying to believe her. Could all the stuff she'd done to him since reappearing with the weapons and Group B really be an act? If it wasn't, why would she keep whispering to him to trust her? His mind turned it all over in circles until he couldn't concentrate anymore. His body was being rubbed raw, and he knew he needed to figure out how to prevent every inch of skin from being scratched off. The mountains saved him. When they started going up the steep slope, it obviously became difficult for the girls to drag his body the way they'd done across flat ground. They tried pulling him in quick jerks, slipping and letting him slide several feet back down, then hauling him back up only to let him slip again. Teresa finally said it'd probably be easier to carry him by the shoulders and ankles, and that they should do it in shifts. An idea hit Thomas then that was so obvious he thought surely he'd missed something. "Why don't you just let me walk?" he called through the burlap, his voice muffled and cracking from thirst. "I mean, you do have weapons. What am I going to do?" Teresa kicked him in the side. "Shut up, Thomas. We're not idiots. We're waiting until your glider buddies can't see us anymore." He'd done his best to stifle his groan when her foot crashed into his rib cage.
"Huh? Why?" "Because that's what we were told to do. Now shut up."
"Why'd you tell him that?" one of the other girls whispered harshly.
"What does it matter?" Teresa responded, not even trying to hide what she was saying. "We're going to kill him anyway. Who cares if he knows what we were told to do?"
Told to do, Thomas thought. By Wicked.
A different girl spoke up. "Well, I can barely see them now. Once we reach that crevice up there, we'll be out of sight, and they'll never find us after that, even if they do follow."
"All right then," Teresa said. "Let's just get him that far." Hands were soon gripping Thomas on all sides, lifting him into the air. From what he could see through the sack, Teresa and three of her new friends were carrying him. They picked their way through boulders and around dead trees, going up and up and up. He heard their heavy breaths, smelled their sweat, hated them more with each jolting step. Even Teresa. He tried one last time to reach her mind, to salvage his trust in her, but she wasn't there. The trudge up the mountain went on for maybe an hour, with stops here and there for girls to switch off carrying duties, and it had been at least twice that long since they'd left the gliders. The sun was reaching a point where it would become dangerous, the heat stifling. But then they rounded a massive wall, the ground leveling a bit, and entered shade. The cooler air was a relief.
"All right," Teresa said. "Drop him."
Without ceremony, they did what she said, and he slammed into the ground with a heavy grunt. It knocked the wind out of him, and he lay there gasping for air as they started untying the ropes. By the time he caught his breath, the bag had been taken off. He blinked, looking up at Teresa and her friends. They all had their weapons pointed at him, which just seemed ridiculous. From somewhere he found a trace of courage.
"You guys must think a lot of me. 20 of you with knives and machetes, me with nothing. I feel so special."
Teresa reared back with her spear.
"Wait!"
Thomas cried, and she stopped. He held his hands up in deference, slowly got to his feet.
"Look, I'm not going to try anything. Just take me wherever we're going, and then I'll let you kill me like a good boy. I don't have any shuck thing to live for anyway."
He looked directly at Teresa when he said this, tried to put as much spite into his words as possible. He still held on to a little hope that somehow this would end up making sense, but either way, after how he'd been treated, he wasn't in such a hot mood.
"Come on," Teresa said. "I'm sick of this. Let's go to the inside of the pass so we can sleep the day off. Tonight we'll start heading through."
The girl with dark skin who'd helped put him in the sack spoke next.
"And what about this guy we've been hauling around for the last few hours?"
"Don't worry, we'll kill him," Teresa replied.
"We'll kill him just the way they told us to.
It's his punishment for what he did to me.